as preaching.
After hearing this, Hiranyakashipu decided to kill his son Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu was so angry that Prahlad Maharaj fell down at his feet and said many things just to pacify him. But he was unsuccessful in satisfying his demoniac father. Hiranyakashipu, as a typical demon, began to advertise himself as being greater than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Prahlad Maharaj challenged him, saying that Hiranyakashipu was not God, and began to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, declaring that the Lord is all-pervading, that everything is under him, and that no one is equal to or greater than him. Thus he requested his father to be submissive to the omnipotent Supreme Lord. The more Prahlad Maharaj glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the more angry and agitated the demon became. Hiranyakashipu asked his Vaishnava son whether his God existed within the columns of the palace, and Prahlad Maharaj immediately accepted that since the Lord is present everywhere, he was also present within the columns. When Hiranyakashipu heard this philosophy from his young son, he derided the boy's statement as just the talk of a child and forcefully struck the pillar with his fist. As soon as Hiranyakashipu struck the column, there issued forth a tumultuous sound. At first, Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons, could not see anything but the pillar. But to substantiate Prahlad's statements, the Lord came out of the pillar in his wonderful incarnation as Narasimha, half lion and half man. Hiranyakashipu could immediately understand that the extraordinarily wonderful form of the Lord was surely meant for his death, and thus he prepared to fight with the form of half lion and half man. The Lord performed his pastimes by fighting with the demon for some time, and in the evening, on the border between day and night, the Lord captured the demon, threw him on his lap and killed him by piercing his abdomen with his nails. The Lord not only killed Hiranyakashipu, the king of the demons, but also killed many of his followers. When there was no one else to fight, the Lord, roaring with anger, sat down on Hiranyakashipu's throne. The entire universe was thus relieved of the rule of Hiranyakashipu, and everyone was jubilant in transcendental bliss. Then all the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, approached the Lord. These included the great saintly persons, the Pitas, the Siddhas, the Vidyadharas, the Nagas, the Manus, the Prajapatis, the Gandharvas and Chalanas and Yakshasas, the Kimpurushas, the Vaitalikas, the Kanadas, and also many other varieties of human beings in human form. So, what's that? Not quite. All of them stood not far from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and began offering their prayers unto the Lord, whose spiritual effulgent was brilliant as he sat on the throne. So it's very interesting here that, you know, many of these different persons, Pitas, Siddhas, Vidyadharas, and many others there, are considered to be varieties of beings in human form. Bear that in mind. So, it'll come up later. So, we're reading from Canto 7, Chapter 8. The Lord slays the king of the demons. Lord Narasimha slays the king of the demons. We've just heard previously Prahlad Maharaj's preaching, telling his friends to give up their materialist education with this demoniac base and to take to devotional service of the Lord, which is the process recommended by the Lord himself, because it's very easy and it gives the highest result. And it awards one transcendental bliss, which is unlimited and not found anywhere else. And it also awards going back home, back to Godhead. So, Narada Muni continued, all the sons of the demons appreciated the transcendental instructions of Prahlad Maharaj and took them very seriously. They rejected the materialistic instructions given by their teachers Sunda and Amaka. So Prabhupada mentions, this is the effect of the preaching of a pure devotee like Prahlad Maharaj. If a devotee is qualified, sincere and serious, about Krishna consciousness, and if he follows the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master, as Prahlad Maharaj did when preaching the instructions he had received from Narada Muni, his preaching is effective. If one tries, he mentions a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3:25-25. If one tries to understand the discourses given by the Sat or pure devotee, those instructions will be very pleasing to the ear and appealing to the heart. Thus, if one is inspired to take to Krishna consciousness, and if one practices the process in his life, he is surely successful in returning home back to Godhead. So in this way, this is how Prahlad's, the sons of the demons, become Vaishnavas. So it's a very, very interesting purport, because Prabhupada gives the only means by which Krishna consciousness can spread. Krishna consciousness spreads through the preaching of a pure devotee. So all other things which may be required will manifest by the grace of the Lord by good preaching. Prabhupada came to America. He didn't have money. He didn't plan, you know, when he came to America, he didn't think, oh, no, I will amass so much wealth and build a big temple and advertise and, you know, spend a lot of money, a lot of advertising, so many different things. In this way, Krishna consciousness was spread. He had no facility at all. He didn't. He had no political support. He had no property, no investments. Basically, he preached. He followed the instructions of a pure devotee and preached. And he preached as a pure devotee, as he was taught, and by that Krishna consciousness was spread. So therefore, this Krishna consciousness spread, it was not dependent on temples, it was not dependent on restaurants, it was not dependent on kitchens, it was not dependent on properties, it was not dependent on any of those things. None of those things existed. This Krishna consciousness movement spread because of what is stated here, that when there is a preaching of a pure devotee, then those instructions become very pleasing to others, and the effect is there that even persons who are being misguided by demons will actually take to Krishna consciousness and give up their interest in, you know, diplomacy and politics, economic development, and etc., etc. Very interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, one of the things, you know, you have to be careful of is that, you know, when you're in a big temple, as we are, you know, the tendency is to start thinking that, oh, because we're creating so much facility to preach, you know, then if that facility is not there, how will we preach? Like that. You know, one of the things I see that, you know, as I travel around Victoria and New South Wales and different places, to where there are now devotees in homes and sometimes doing Rathi Yatra and little congregations of devotees here, there and everywhere. Sometimes I go to these home programs And I remember, you know, as a young devotee, a brahmachari, or, you know, in the early 80s and what have you, travelling through with a little picture of Krishna, a little picture of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a little picture of Prabhupada, and Nrisingadev, and we would go there and do Mangalarti and do our worship and read, try and, you know, collect some money, engage people, preach to anyone who was interested. And we understood that if we did that, one day in all these towns and villages there will be devotees. And now we see that. So we went in there as we had nothing. We parked the car at night, find a river, sleep by the river or the ocean. Or if that wasn't there, we'd sneak into the hospital at night or something and have a shower there. Cook our meals on a little campfire, try and keep warm, and just sleep there, and then just do Mangalarti under the stars, chant our rounds. You know, in the early days, we didn't have tents, we didn't stay in motels, we didn't stay in camping grounds, we didn't stay in caravans. We just parked the car. One or two people could sleep in the back of the panel van, others slept on the ground. That was it. So, and you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, we get up, cold bath in the river, in the ocean. And now you go there, and you know, there are people, Jani Hare Krishna, following Krishna consciousness, initiated devotees. And we had that understanding. The Prabhupada said, if you do this, it will happen, and it happened. But we didn't go into there with a big facility. We didn't go into there and establish anything. The only thing we had, you know, we were just very poor devotees. you know, because you see that sometimes, you know, in a temple, and this is the problem that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura had, that they all started fighting over the facility. Even sannyasis, even those who are, you know, very, as if somehow that has some importance. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta say, what important, sell them if you're going to fight and just, you know, print books and preach. We don't need them. You know, if they're useful, use them. But they're not, you know, you don't need that to push on Krishna consciousness. Why would you fight over facility? It has no importance to a devotee. If they can use it, they use it. But if they don't, they just follow this process. They preach and they get effect. So it's a very interesting purport, isn't it?
When you're talking about there's no facility required for preaching. Like, how do you, sometimes you might, for example, one can argue that, okay, I need to have, well, good rest so that I can preach, or that, oh, I need whatever, you know, I need a comfortable place so that I can preach. Mm. There may be psychological or physiological needs that they may feel that they need before they start preaching. So how do we know how much is actually required to preach, and kind of what's the line that we draw? And is it something that's going to be different for everyone, or can we push on? And
well, you know, there's we used to work so hard during the day that, you know, if you found a place to lay down, you just went straight to sleep. It didn't matter whether you were laying on the road, on the park bench, on the ground. You didn't care how cold it was. If you were that tired, you just went to sleep. And you had a good night's sleep. I remember one time, myself and Savaksha, who was a Prabhupada disciple. He passed away in an unfortunate circumstances, but when we were trying to establish a Perth temple, we used to go out and collect, and we would travel thousands of miles, you know, sometimes when you get up north, the distance between, we just shut that door. The distance between one city and the other is like about 500 miles or something. So, you know, if you spend a few days in a city and, like, you know, Broome, and you wanted to head towards Port Hedland or something, you wanted, you know, we would think, well, you know, if we spend the next day driving that distance, we'll lose a day's collection. So at the end of a long day, you know, after 2 or 3 days, we would leave at night and just drive all night so we could get up in the morning or, you know, get a couple of hours sleep when we got there and then try and do some more collection. So anyway, one time we were going from one city there in West Australia to another, and someone said, oh, don't go because there's a cyclone. So, you know, we had a chat with each other and we thought, well, you know, we're really going to lose a day's collection if we don't go. So we actually took off, you know. And on the way there, what had happened was, you know, with the cyclone, of course, it goes through. So it went through in front of us. And, you know, it was 100 miles ahead, but then we caught up to it. So we then got to the eye of the storm. But it was very flooded. So in some parts, the water was up to the doors, you know, the windows on the doors it was driving through. And, of course, if you get stuck, you're out in the middle of the desert and then you've got to cop the rest of the cyclone in your car. And I remember seeing the clouds. They were so black. And it was like, you know, someone had spread, you know, black plastic, and it was just about 6 inches above the car, and above it was like about, you know, 1,000 meters of, you know, water just waiting to burst through. It was like it just heavy. And the thunder, every time the thunder and the lightning, the roof just rumbled, literally, you know. And anyway, we got to the town and we pitched up our tent, and we're still in the eye of the storm. It was a big city. And in the middle of the night, the rest of the hurricane, the cyclone, came through. And I woke up and I turned around to Savaksha, and he was, you know, we just went straight to sleep. But our tent was, you know, in about, say, 8 inches of water or something. So his face was half in the water and half out. So his nose, his mouth, and he was just sleeping comfortably. He was so tired. In the middle of a hurricane, he was so tired. I don't know how he was even breathing. He was half in, half out. Anyway, and the tent started to collapse on us. And we were just both sleeping bags, you know, just completely. I said, Savaksha, the storm, you know, the cyclone has hit now. We have to get in the car. And he was so tired, he just rolled over and went to sleep. I got the car and he just slept in there. I got up in the morning, the tent was on top of him. He's just covered with water. He was so tired. So,
almost drowned.
I don't know how he survived. I really don't. I've never seen anything like it. But the point is, when you're really tired, you just need a place to lie down. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, I still sleep in the car. You know, if I go out, I don't know, it's... If anyone's been in my car, there's a lot of paraphernalia. Oh. I just find a little spot in amongst that, and I'll just sort of sleep soundly for an hour, curl up and like that. Even on a hot day like that, I'm just so tired lately. But, yeah, you know, the temples, because, you know, for the preachers, they can preach, you know, anytime, anywhere, any situation. But the people they're preaching to, we understand that they can't, you know, they must have facility. And, you know, the temples, you know, Prabhupada would say, you know, if he sat under, you know, came to the West and sat under a tree, you know, and just preached, you know, he wouldn't get many people. I mean, you know, you'd get some, but... the facility is, you know, if you preach, people will come and facility will come. So we use a facility for their comfort. It's not necessarily, you know, it's not necessarily for the, you know, the devotee, the pure devotee. They depend on Krishna. They're quite happy to just to. They're not even aware sometimes of their, you know, material body. We've read that in the previous verse. It becomes completely spiritualized. You know, their personal needs become, you know, quite irrelevant. You know, a really pure devotee has no concept of what is happiness and distress. Their only concept of happiness and distress is, you know, is Krishna happy? So the facility, you know, we utilize that for the people we're preaching to help them, because you know, they just beginning, they're not necessarily on a very advanced spiritual platform, and therefore they need all sorts of temple facilities and you know, and of course, you know, even the brahmacharis and the brahmacharinis, you know, they're a different caliber these days. You know, they need more facility. You know, they need their own little room, a couple of people in a room, and a bed, and so many things.
Computer.
So we used to just sleep on the floor up there and upstairs, and where the shop is was an open balcony. And so on a hot night, you know, you could sleep out there. But actually, sometimes, you know, if you got extra devotees, didn't matter whether it was cold or hot, you slept out there because it was the only place you could sleep. Devotees just sleep in the temple room as well, you know, if there was not enough room. And devotees would sleep anywhere. You'd find them sleeping all over the place. As long as you were up before everyone else, it didn't matter where you slept. You know, the main thing was that whenever, you know, if you were sleeping somewhere that was sort of in a place that other devotees would see you, then you had to be up before everyone else so that they didn't have to walk past some sleeping devotee, you know, in the courtyard or wherever. But, yeah, so, you know, the facility is for the people we're preaching to. Prabhupada didn't, you know, I mean, but as we read by Prahlad Maharaj, that, you know, one should serve the spiritual master. It means serve the Vaishnava. Spiritual master, as we explained, not just, you know, my Diksha Guru. Serve the Guru, it means you serve those very advanced devotees who are preaching Krishna consciousness very nicely. And whatever facility comes, should be offered to the Vaishnavas as their possession for their preaching. And for their bodily, you know, maintenance, to look, make sure they're well, you know, make sure they're well fed, and clothed, you know, the medical things are looking at. So, quite often the, you know, those who, you know, sometimes the preachers are so much busy preaching that they neglect their own things. But it means that, you know, the facility that comes, the people who are managing that should be looking after the preachers, not fighting over it for their own, you know, glorification or, you know, self-serving means. And that facility is you know, meant to be offered in the service of the Vaishnavas.
So how come over the years it changed and now we don't offer facilities to the guests and only keep it for ourselves?
Who's keeping it for themselves?
The facilities.
Who is doing that? Tell them to stop.
We only offer prasadam these days, nothing else. I saw at one point of time when devotee was sleeping here, he had to get up and go.
Well, we have to maintain the sanctity of the temple. It's not a place for, you know, people to just come in and sleep. As I remember, you know, last year, the year before, there was a whole bunch of people coming into the room where I keep the jagya things, and they would sit there and they would, you know, eat prasadam and serve guests while they're eating and fight amongst each other and talk about rock and roll. You know, their clothes weren't very clean and they would sleep. And it got to the point where when I came in, I was nothing but a disturbance. They were very angry at me. And if I wanted to open my locker, I had to ask them, I had to wake people up, ask them to move the chair. And that led to, that was one of the things that led to me getting attacked, because I disturbed the people in that room when I was trying to get my juggy gear. And they all sort of conspired against me. And when I complained to the temple, unfortunately, you know, their policy was that, well, you know, what do they say? The report I got back was, you know, Ganga complains a lot, therefore don't take any notice. And that gave them authority to then cause me more trouble. So, you know, you don't want people just coming in, laying around, sleeping, taking advantage, using our showers and not paying and so many things. Prabhupada said, it's not a transcendental hotel. That's what he said. And he was talking about the devotees who are even, you know, engaged in Krishna consciousness. Be very careful. You know, the devotees, even those who are come to serve Srila Prabhupada, don't treat it like a transcendental hotel. You know, you do your work, you preach, you know, but don't, it's not for eating and sleeping and, you know, sense gratification. What to speak of people coming in off the street treating it like that. So, no, we don't allow people to misuse facility, which is meant for, you know, to get the maximum benefit for those who are sincere. Prabhupada says here, you know, in the purport, that if a devotee is qualified, what does he say? Sincere and serious about Krishna consciousness, and if he follows the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master, as Prahlad did, his preaching is effective. But, you know, we certainly want to, we're catering to everyone, we're giving everyone the opportunity, but certainly those who are the most sincere and serious, we should give the best of our facility and time for them. Prabhupada gave the example that, you know, on a battlefield, the medics go out there, they want to save everyone, but they see that some are hopeless, so they just leave them. And they go to those with the most hope and they look after them first. And that's natural.
Yeah. The facilities we offer people are not like material, but means we're offering people opulent deity worship. But it's not just prasadam, but deity worship.
Deity worship, festivals.
Yeah, bhagavatam class every day.
Yeah.
And there's classes a lot. Like this. Yeah. This is the facility we offer people.
A place to do ceremonies,
yeah.
To learn.
Yeah.
It is an educational institution.
Yeah.
So there is a lot. We're offering people a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good friendship.
And the friendship and Krishna consciousness, yeah.
So it's going to say, we made it kind of the same
culture.
The devotees don't need. The facilities are for people we're preaching to.
Mm.
That
they are, that. Yes, but also they're also meant for the preachers to preach.
Yeah. But it's interesting how that happens because, you know, most devotees before they join, especially in a Western setting, would be accustomed to having. Plenty of facility, material facility, and just by their sincerity and surrender, they kind of just let it go.
Mm.
When they come to Krishna consciousness, they don't need it.
Mm. It's you know, we have seeds of envy and jealousy and materialism within our heart, and we were discussing this last week, you know, that. Sometimes when devotees commit Vaishnava Parad, then Bhakti Devi, even though they're still performing all sorts of devotional service, Bhakti Devi withdraws her mercy, which means they don't actually get a taste from the devotional service, and therefore naturally trying to get happiness, they revert to trying to enjoy the material aspects, facility of Krishna consciousness. Usually it's a result of Vaishnava Parad that, especially when you see senior devotees do that, then it means there's been some Vaishnava aparad, which is their taste for enjoying, you know, Krishna consciousness has been reduced. Bhakti Devi has withdrawn.
Talking about the facilities, sorry, just one more question. The preachers do need that facility to go out and preach, and sometimes there could be, if there are a lot of services around in the temple, then would you say that can be a bit of an hindrance at times to, you know, like really go out and of course you could still preach in terms of people coming to the temple, or you could still do a little bit book distribution or a little bit of harinam, but then if you really want to do it on a bigger scale, then that's also a facility that preachers do need.
Well, no one preached on a bigger scale than Prabhupada. Is someone doing something bigger than Prabhupada? You know, he had some books. I mean, you can take a couple of books, a pair of cartels, you can preach. Prabhupada preached on a big, he preached all over the world. Is there someone preaching on a bigger scale than that?
But the purity of Prabhupada is different from
that. No, but the principle is...
a person of such so pure as Prabhupada, no issues.
No, but that's not quite correct, because in this purport, we actually get this instruction. You see, here it says that if a devotee is qualified and... We're talking about Prahlad Maharaj, sincere and serious about Krishna consciousness, and if he follows the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master as Prahlad Maharaj did when preaching the instructions he had received from Narada Muni, his preaching is effective. So we don't have to be Prabhupada. Prahlad Maharaj doesn't have to be Narada Muni. We just have to follow their instructions as we have received them, and be sincere and serious. And then we will, the effect that Srila Prabhupada got, we will also get. That's what's being said here. We don't have to do something different to what Prabhupada... In other words, we shouldn't invent a new philosophy that, okay, Prabhupada can do that. But because this is the new ISKCON, where none of us are Prabhupada, so we have a new type. We're going to disregard what we're reading in the Bhagavatam, and we have a new philosophy that now it's good to have lots of facility because we're not Prabhupada, and that will be the new way to be effective in preaching. We're supposed to do exactly what Prabhupada did, and that will be effective. You know, we're not dependent on facility, we're dependent on something else. What is that?
Krishna.
We're dependent on Krishna, and Krishna's mercy comes via the pure devotee. So if we don't have facility, and Krishna feels that it's that it would be good, he will give it. He will give it. So if we, you know, if there's the opportunity to preach and the facility is not there, we don't knock back that opportunity to preach. Oh, no, not enough facility. I'll wait. I've got a 5-year plan. Then I'll go out and preach. You know, the opportunity to preach and we don't have the facility, we say, yes, let us preach. And if facility is required, Krishna will provide. You know, when Prabhupada left India, he understood there is no facility, I must just go. It's too important it's too important to delay, because people need Krishna consciousness because they're going to hell. How many people will I let go to hell before I get up and do something? And two, he understood that, okay, there is no facility, but if facility is required, Krishna will provide it. And Krishna did provide it. So, you know, it's a very... this is one of the things we learned from Prahlad Maharaj. That he was doing, you know, Prabhupada did exactly what Prahlad Maharaj did. You know, Prabhupada didn't say, oh, you know, well, I'm not Prahlad Maharaj, you know. I need more facility before I preach. You know, he said, Prahlad Maharaj had no facility, he was a little boy. These were demons, so much power, so much facility. And Prahlad Maharaj just preached according to the instructions of Radha Muni, and his preaching was effective. And Prabhupada said, I will do exactly what Prahlad Maharaj did, and he did exactly that, and he got the same result as Prahlad Maharaj. So as Prahlad Maharaj did millions of years ago, Prabhupada did, and there's no reason why we should not do that. When Sananda and Amaka, the sons of Sukracharya, observed that all the students, the sons of the demons, were becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness because of the association of Prahlad Maharaj, they were afraid. They approached the king of the demons and described the situation as it was. So Prabhupada, again, takes in this purport. The fact is that anyone who associates with a pure devotee and follows his instructions becomes fixed in Krishna consciousness and is not disturbed by materialistic consciousness. You know, there are five principles of all the activities of devotional service. The five stand above all the others as the most potent. Associated devotees, chanting Hare Krishna, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam from devotees, worshipping the temple, residing in worshipping the deity in the temple, Lord Tulsi, and residing in the Holy Dham. And amongst those five, chanting Hare Krishna and association with the devotees are considered the top two amongst those five. And even hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, that must be done, you know, by hearing it from a devotee as well.
So in all preaching forms.
And even hearing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra must be received from a pure devotee. So, you know, really coming back to the association of devotees is such an important factor. And so if you get that association of pure devotee, you know, someone, and that means... And one may not necessarily be a pure devotee, but if they're, you know, as we saw in the first report, if they're following the instructions of a pure devotee and they're sincere and serious, they'll also get the effect of, you know, by the mercy of the pure devotee they're following. So it's very, very powerful.
So of all the various preaching efforts, chanting Hare Krishna and getting people to chant Hare Krishna is the top, is that the topmost thing?
Yeah. But chanting Hare Krishna, you know, that Hare Krishna Maha Mantra has to be received by the pure devotee anyway. And if it's chanted under the instructions of a pure devotee, then it becomes very quickly effective. Yeah. So those two together especially. When Hiranyakasipu understood the entire situation, he was extremely angry, so much so that his body trembled. Thus he finally decided to kill his son Prahlad. Hiranyakasipu was by nature very cruel and feeling insulted. He began hissing like a snake, trampled upon by someone's foot. His son Prahlad was peaceful, mild and gentle. His senses were under control, and he stood before Hiranyakasipu with folded hands. According to Prahlad's age and behaviour, he was not to be chastised, yet with staring, crooked eyes, Hiranyakasipu rebuked him with the following harsh words. Yeah. Actually, when I was on the farm, I almost stood on a large tiger snake, very deadly. I was walking from the ashram, from the temple down to the ashram, and I saw my dog Haridas was in front of me. He started sniffing the ground. I thought, oh, maybe He's picked up the scent of something. So I looked down, and when I looked down, my next step was going to be on this snake's head. This snake was about as long as this table. It was huge. It was massive, you know. And it had curled up, you know, and it was like about an inch away from my calf and was ready to strike, but it just stopped and didn't. But I was just about to... And then I don't know how I did it, but I sort of pirouetted up and then landed, you know, about a metre away. It's almost like I flew. One leg was up, right? So I got all my weight on one leg and still I managed to pirouette up. You try high enough and then land about a metre away. I don't know how I did it. Here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada describes, when one is impudent toward a highly authorized devotee, one is punished by the laws of nature. The duration of his life is diminished, and he loses the blessings of superior persons and the results of pious activities. Hiranyakasipu, for example, had achieved such great power in the material world that he could subdue practically all the planetary systems in the universe, including the heavenly planets, Svargaloka. Yet now, because of his mistreatment of such a Vaishnava as Prahlad Maharaj, all the results of his tapasya diminished. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.4.46, when one mistreats great souls, his lifespan, opulence, reputation, religion, possessions and good fortune are all destroyed. Text number 5. Hiranyakasipu said, you know, therefore, you know, there is no, as long as one remains a humble devotee, in other words, a sincere and serious devotee, trying to follow the instructions in the line of Srila Prabhupada that he received from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, so the servant. And just remains a humble servant, a humble devotee, there is no power in the universe that can defeat that. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says, there is no power within this universe greater than humility. But that humble position as a servant. And you see that here, Hiranyakasipu was the greatest power in the universe. Just by his anger, as it says, when one is impotent toward a highly authorized devotee, one is punished by the laws of nature, everything is destroyed. So Hiranyakasipu said, a most impotent, most unintelligent disruptor of the family, a lowest of mankind, you have violated my power to rule you, and therefore you are an obstinate fool. Today I shall send you to the place of Yamaraj. So, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti the core, you know, the devotees, even this is in the Bhagavatam, the devotees don't like to hear something critical of a pure devotee. But Mother Sarasvati is very clever in that, in the minds of the demons they are criticizing, but she has a trick where, in essence, they're really, you know, the devotee receives a glorification. Still, the demons get the effect of their intent to be impotent. So, you know, another meaning is that, you know, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, Prahlad Maharaj was especially brought to this material world to teach people how to get out of the material condition. And similarly, you know, other words, Prahlad Maharaj is the guide of all the mandas, or bad living entities, who are under the influence of Maya. He is a benefactor even of the slow and bad living entities in the material world. Prahlad Maharaj made great personalities who established big, big families seem insignificant. He made no distinction between one living entity and another, therefore he was greater than the great Prajapatis who established the dynasties. He did not care for the instructions of the Asuras. He just remained silent. Every living entity is under the control of Yamaraj, but Hiranyakashipu said that he considered Prahlad Maharaj his deliverer, for Prahlad would stop Hiranyakashipu's repetition of birth and death. Because Prahlad Maharaj, being a great devotee, was better than any yogi, Hiranyakashipu was to be brought among the society of bhakti yogis. My son, Prahlad, you rascal, you know that when I am angry, all the planets of the three worlds tremble, along with their chief rulers. By whose power has a rascal like you become so impotent that you appear fearless and overstep my power to rule you? So Prabhupada mentions that the relationship between a pure devotee and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely relishable. A devotee never claims to be very powerful himself. Instead, he fully surrenders to the lotus feet of Krishna, being confident that in all dangerous conditions, Krishna will protect his devotee. Krishna said in the Gita 9:31, O son of Kunti, declare boldly that my devotee never perishes. Lord Krishna requested Arjuna to declare this instead of declaring it himself, because sometimes Krishna changes his view and therefore people might not believe him. Thus Krishna asked Arjuna to declare that a devotee of the Lord is never vanquished. So now Hiranyakashipu was perplexed how his five-year-old boy could be so fearless that he did not care for the order of his very great and powerful father. A devotee cannot execute the order of anyone except the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the position of a devotee. Hiranyakashipu could understand that this boy must have been very powerful, since the boy did not heed his orders. He was asking, how have you overcome my order? By whose strength have you done this? Prahlad Maharaj said, my dear king, the source of my strength of which you are asking is also the source of yours. Indeed, the original source of all kinds of strength is one. He is not only your strength or mine, but the only strength for everyone. Without him, no one can get any strength, whether moving or non-moving, superior or inferior. Everyone, including Lord Brahma, is controlled by the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Prabhupada mentions in this purport that one's only duty is to surrender, for one is a servant and cannot independently attain the position of master. One can attain the position of master only by the mercy of the master, not independently. Unless one understands this philosophy, he is still a mudha. In other words, he is not very intelligent. The mudhas, the asas, who do not have this intelligence, cannot surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Understanding the subordinate position of the living entity takes millions of births. But when one is actually wise, he surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 7:19, after many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Prahlad Maharaj was a great soul, a Mahatma, and therefore he completely surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord. He was confident that Krishna could give him protection under all circumstances. So, very interesting point here that, you know, the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita is that Krishna says that, you know, there are many great and powerful personalities. He quotes it, Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 10:41, you know, here, that of all that is splendorous and glorious, you know that they're all coming from a spark of my splendor. So Krishna is the supreme controller of everyone and everything. That is the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. Those who know that are great souls, and they are called Mahatmas. And those who accept Krishna as an ordinary human being and cannot surrender him are called Mudhas. And the Bhagavad Gita says, those who, you know, consider me an ordinary human being, they deride me, they're mudhas. So in India, the majority of people who may accept Bhagavad Gita say that we accept the Bhagavad Gita, but we just do not accept Krishna. Maybe he's, you know, some historic person, this, that, and the other, so many things. So we accept the Bhagavad Gita, but we just don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Person of Godhead. So that means they accept the philosophy of the Gita. So we've just described what the Gita's philosophy is. That they're accepting that, yes, I am a first-class mudha, because I accept the Bhagavad Gita and not accept Krishna. I've admitted I accept the philosophy of the Gita. That means I'm admitting I'm a mudha, because that is the teaching, because I do not accept Krishna. So by their own admission, they're so foolish that they're calling themselves foolish to display their intelligence. If you accept the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, then Krishna says, if you don't accept me, you're a mudha. That's the philosophy. Yes, I accept. I fully understood. Now give me praise. Worship my feet. Come and hear my lectures. So it actually makes no sense. So their statement is, so then who would hear from a mudha? I accepting the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, not Krishna, I'm a mudha. Now you come and study from me. So then what sort of a mudha would study from someone who's accepting that they're a mudha? The Supreme Person of Godhead, who is the supreme controller and time factor, is the power of the senses, the power of the mind, the power of the body, and the vital force of the senses. His influence is unlimited. He is the best of all living entities. The controller of the three modes of material nature, by his own power, he creates his cosmic manifestation, maintains it, and annihilates it also. Prahlad Maharaj continued, my dear father, please give up your demoniac mentality. Do not discriminate in your heart between enemies and friends. Make your mind equipoise toward everyone. Except for the uncontrolled and misguided mind, there is no enemy within this world. When one sees everyone on the platform of equality, One then comes to the position of worshipping the Lord perfectly. So, Prahlad is explaining the preliminary condition by which one can enter into devotional service. One must control the mind and senses and see things equally poised. In former times, there were many fools like you who did not conquer the six enemies that steal away the wealth of the body. These fools were very proud, thinking, I have conquered all enemies in the 10 directions. But if a person is victorious over the six enemies and equipoised toward all living entities, for him there are no enemies. Enemies are merely imagined by one in ignorance. Again, very powerful words. So, someone says, there was this... So there's some great problem that doesn't exist. So then a person spends the best part of their life solving a problem that didn't exist in the first place. And then says, now I have fixed this problem. Just see my fella. So someone, you know, someone says, you know, it's like digging a hole and filling it up. You know, just some nonsensical thing that people do in this world. I've dug a hole. That hole was a problem, so I filled it up. Just see. Oh, good. Basically, one has just followed the dictations of the foolish mind to do something that didn't need to be done. What is the valor in that? Hiranyakashipu replied, you rascal, you are trying to minimize my value as if you were better than me. He's seething like a snake. Better than me than controlling the senses. This is over-intelligent. Oh, there you go. That's where Prabhupada gets his... statement, over intelligence. Prabhupada used that a lot. It's very humorous, that statement. But so we've just, Prahlad Maharaj has actually just said to Hiranyakashipu, you're over intelligent. Because you've solved a problem of defeating all your enemies, and actually you don't have any enemies except your own mind. So you're over intelligent. That is the very definition, but he's calling Prahlad over intelligent. But actually, it's Hiranyakashipu. Prabhupada used to use this term over intelligent when someone has, you know, Hiranyakashipu was no fool in one sense. It took a lot of intelligence to conquer, you know, all the heavenly planets, the whole universe, and to rule it. But he didn't have to do any of that. So therefore, he had so much intelligence to do something that didn't need to be done, to do something that ultimately was just very foolish and did not need to be done, and just caused himself and others trouble. That's over-intelligent. It means there's intelligence there, more intelligence than what he required, and he just got himself into trouble. Like that. I can therefore understand that you desire to die at my hands. For this kind of nonsensical talk is indulged in by those about to die. It is said in Hitupadesh, Upadeshahi Mokanam Pakyopayana Santaye. If good instructions are given to a foolish person, he does not take advantage of them, but becomes more and more angry. Prahlad Maharaj's authorized instructions to his father were not accepted by Hiranyakashipu as truth. Instead, Hiranyakashipu became increasingly angry at his son, who was a pure devotee. This kind of difficulty always exists when a devotee preaches Krishna consciousness to persons like Hiranyakashipu who are interested in money and women, or, you know, money and sex. Haranya means gold and Kashyapu means cushions or good bedding. Moreover, a father does not like to be instructed by his son, especially if the father is a demon. Prahlad Maharaj's Vaishnava preaching to his demoniac father was indirectly effective, for because of Hiranyakashipu's excessive jealousy to Krishna and his devotee, he was inviting Nrisingadeva to kill him very quickly. Thus, he was expediting his being killed by the Lord himself. Although Hiranyakashipu was a demon, he is described here by the added word Sri. Why? The answer is that fortunately he had such a great devotee son as Prahlad Maharaj. Thus, although he was a demon, he would attain salvation and return home back to Godhead. So, we described earlier on how, talking about, not wanting the temple to be a transcendental hotel for, freeloaders, the Prabhupada's words, he didn't want it to be a transcendental hotel. And I was describing in the Jagya room, previously, I had to weave my way through a crowded room of people talking about rock and roll, eating bishadam, arguing amongst each other, and sleeping. And somehow, when I entered the room to get my things, I was actually the person who was in everyone's way. I was annoying them. And when I, explained to them, actually, we don't sleep in the temple. We don't serve guests while we eat bishadam. We don't argue to guests while we eat bishadam. We don't argue to guests while we serve bishadam. This is not a place to congregate. It's a place where we keep our transcendental paraphernalia for preaching. And the result was that they became very angry at me. And that. And Prabhupada, another way he says this is that he said, it's folly to be wise in a fool's paradise. So, in preaching, sometimes we learn the hard way that, some people you just cannot give instructions to. And that includes some devotees, the other week, was last Sunday, I came to the temple. I'd missed breakfast at home because I had to race to the temple. And I missed breakfast at the temple, so I hadn't eaten. I have a lot of different health issues, so I have to eat at some stage because I have a mature body. And so I got to lunch, and I'd done ceremonies all the way up to lunch, and I had ceremonies to do straight after lunch. So I had a short time where I could actually eat something which I needed to do. So there's a devotee who regularly serves. I think he may even be initiated. I'm not sure, but he's always here, always in the Dodian tap, and he sometimes serves. So I don't eat rice because it gives me asthma and things like that. So I said, I'll take another spoon of the sabji. Simple instruction, huh? So he'd given me one spoon. I said, I need more. I'll take another spoon. So he gave me a little teaspoon. And put it, he's got the big spoon, he gives me a little teaspoon. I said, Prabhu, I need a full spoon. I said, I work like 10 men, and I need to eat, I need you to give me a proper spoon. He gave me a little teaspoon. So this is a regular devotee, I was really surprised. I said, Prabhu, if you can't do that, I'll get someone to serve me. I'm Suchi, I'll just take it myself. He gave me another teaspoon. Nine times. Yeah? Nine times he did that. I was so angry. And I thought, just a simple instruction. Why? Why would you do that? Because I'm telling him straight out. But he couldn't follow, a simple instruction. I didn't get angry. I didn't get angry because I've learned in this temple, that people sometimes do as they please, and they seem to always be authorized by someone to do this sort of stuff. So I don't, So, you know, to what I found is that you follow the chain up. Who is giving him the authority to do that? You find there's another rascal above him, and you keep going up. And therefore, it becomes a nightmare to sort it. So you just leave. It's folly to be wise and fool's paradise.
And he didn't say a word to you, asking for a teaspoon each time.
If I didn't stand there, he was hoping I'd walk away. But I actually needed that prasadam, so I stood there until I got 9 teaspoons. I would have liked more, but I'd given up.
Was this 2 weeks ago?
Was that? Last week.
Yeah, I was there.
So.
I was next to you.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yes.
I was so angry, but I didn't want to chastise him, because I know, you know, that sometimes you just can't. It just causes you more trouble, because they'll get angry as if, you know. And he said to me, he said, you know, we have to keep this for the other guests, for everyone. He would have just argued. He would have argued with me for 20 minutes, which is embarrassing to the guests. And the devotee beside him on the other side, he just hung his head in shame. He's a very quiet devotee, but he didn't want to say anything. He could see that something was very wrong, but it, you know, he's not the sort of person to speak up, and he just put his head down like this, you know.
Hare Krishna.
Folly to be wise in a fool's paradise. O most fortunate Prahlad, you have always described a supreme being other than me. A supreme being who is above everything, who is the controller of everyone, and who is all-pervading. But where is he? If he is everywhere, then why is he not present before me in this pillar? So Srila Prabhupada mentions, the demons sometimes declare to a devotee that they cannot accept the existence of God because they cannot see him. But what the demon does not know is stated by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita, 7:25, I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my yoga maya. So actually the Lord, you know, he's not manifest purposely to them. The Lord is open to being seen by devotees, but non-devotees cannot see him. The qualification for seeing God is stated in Brahma Samhita 5:38. Pramanjana Chadita Bhakti Vilojanina. A devotee who has developed a genuine love for Krishna can always see him everywhere, whereas a demon, not having a clear understanding of the Supreme Lord, cannot see him. As there's those prayers by Queen Kunti, you know, that the devotees of the Lord see him everywhere at all times, and others cannot see him at all, you know, anywhere at any time. So, when Hiranyakashipu was threatening to kill Prahlad Maharaj, Prahlad certainly saw the column standing before him and his father. And he saw that the Lord was present in the pillar to encourage him not to fear his demoniac father's words. The Lord was present to protect him. Hiranyakashipu marked Prahlad's observation and asked him, where is your God? Prahlad Maharaj replied, he is everywhere. Then Hiranyakashipu asked, why is he not in this pillar before me? Thus, in all circumstances, the devotee can always see the Supreme Lord, whereas the non-devotee cannot. So, of course, Hiranyakashipu is thinking Prahlad is very unfortunate because he's going to kill him, he won't inherit his property. But they can't see the real truth is that Prahlad was the most fortunate person within the three worlds because he was protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all circumstances. because you were speaking so much nonsense, I shall now sever your head from your body. Now let me see your most worshipful God and come to protect you. I want to see it. The Prabhupada mentions, demons always think that God, the God of the devotees, is fictitious. He says, they think that there is no God and the so-called religious feeling of devotion to God is but an opiate, a kind of illusion, that like the illusions derived from LSD and opium. You know, at one time I looked up, I think it was, what was it? The Reader's Digest Encyclopedia for the definition of what is Hinduism. And in there it described that, you know, like this primitive tribe, you know, that sort of come in from the north, west or something, you know, perhaps from some European background or something. And that, you know, they're armed with bows and arrows, and they used to worship all sorts of gods, including Indra, and take the Soma Rasa, which was most likely, they said, some sort of hallucinogenic, you know, intoxication. So the picture they're giving of Hinduism, so all of this, all these Bhagavatams, if you read the Reader's Digest Encyclopedia, you'll see that, you know, this all come from these, you know, primitive natives, you know, sort of running around the forest and you know, the land in India many thousands of years ago, high on, you know, magic mushrooms, and in their, you know, hallucinogenic state, they, you know, concocted all these and had all these religious epiphanies. Reader's Digest. It's like a standard, you know, thing that the kids will look up. You know, as soon as they're old enough to look up what is Hinduism, that's the sort of thing that they're going to be fed. How they even get away with that, it's unbelievable. But that, you know, so Prabhupada puts it there, and you know, this is where it's coming from.
Yeah, Max Muller and, you know, a lot of other Western Indologists have also, you know, they have mistranslated the Vedas.
Yeah. Yeah.
They had an agenda behind.
Yeah. That's, they had an agenda, that's right. Because Prabhupada mentions the agenda. He tells you what the agenda is. Prabhupada knows the whole history because he was brought up in those times. He said, different foreign countries would question the British. Why are you occupying India? You know, because they, you know, in other words, why are you pilfering that country? You know, and their answer was, because they're primitive, we're educating them, you know, giving them culture. So that their agenda was, in order for us to stay here and, you know, rob this country of all its wealth, we have to appear like respectable gentlemen who are doing them benefit. And therefore, we will not allow ever that anything which appears to be symptoms of civilization be known to the rest of the world. And all their writings and history of India are based upon that. And it still exists to this day.
Yes.
Mm.
And they say that in Indian schools as well. They tell the Indian the students in India that it's good that the Britishers came, otherwise we won't have any modern civilization today.
They don't tell them that the zero came from India. You know, they accredit it to Europeans, but it actually came from Indian mathematics.
Yeah.
I think it was going to
Arabic,
I think, because
it went through the
Arabic took them from India.
They took it from India, and then from there,
yeah.
You know. So in other words, then it went to the European,
yeah.
But they won't give the credit to India. And Prabhupada mentions the example of the wireless. You know, there was. Marconi.
Yeah.
And it was Chandra Bose or something.
Yes, yeah. 800 much before.
Yeah.
Marconi.
Yeah. But it was stolen. They're not going to give the credit to them. You know? They're going to steal the credit. Most of the, many of the proverbs, early to bed, early to rise makes the person healthy, wealthy and wise. You know, you think it's coming from England or Europe. That's actually Chanaka Pandit, just, changed a little. But they're not going to give them credit. So, being obsessed with anger, Hiranyakashipu, who was a very great in bodily strength, thus chastised his exalted devotee son, Prahlad, with harsh words. Cursing him again and again, Hiranyakashipu took up his sword, got up from his royal throne, and with great anger struck his fist against the column. Then from within the pillar came a fearful sound which appeared to crack the covering of the universe. Oh, my dear Yudhisthira, this sound reached even the abodes of the demigods like Lord Brahma. And when the demigods heard it, they thought, oh, now our planets are being destroyed. While showing his extraordinary prowess, Hiranyakashipu, who desired to kill his own son, heard that wonderful tumultuous sound which had never before been heard. Upon hearing the sound, the other leaders of the demons were afraid. None of them could find the origin of that sound in the assembly. Yeah, the Lord, from within the pillar came a fearful sound which appeared like which appeared to crack the covering of the universe. While showing, Srila Prabhupada mentions in this verse, Bhagavad Gita 7:8, how Krishna is the taste of water, the light of the sun, the syllable om, and the sound in ether and the ability of man. Here the Lord exhibited his presence everywhere by the tumultuous sound in the sky. The tumultuous thundering sound was proof of the Lord's presence.
So the sound came from the sky, not from the pillar.
It came from the pillar, but then it travelled, it became all-pervading throughout the whole sky. Because it was non-different from the Lord, so it was all-pervading. To prove that the statement of his servant Prahlad Maharaj was substantial, in other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall.
Is it true that the form of the assembly was half man, half lion, was not present in Vaikuntha? But only he continuously appears within the material world in his place?
Yeah, his form in Vaikuntha is as Narayan, form Narayan. So that is the feature, just like the baby form of Krishna. That is eternally present within the material universe as his Leela. But it is not an eternal form in the spiritual world. I asked that to remind from me once, and he said, yeah.
Yeah, I read something different in Vrindavan.
What did it say?
Even different forms, they're saying, it was mentioned that it was mentioned that there was an eternal form for, Kurma, Matsya, etc.
In Vaikuntha?
In
that form as Kurma?
Yeah. And also, it's also mentioned that the devotees who worship the Lord in that form, even they get sarupya with the Lord and they get such kind of forms.
And is that
I can give the reference in read a couple of times because it was a bit difficult for me to understand.
And is that the Vaikuntha, for instance, because the Lord is always in Vaikuntha, even when he's in this material world.
Yeah.
So does that refer to the Vaikuntha in the spiritual sky? Or the
in the spiritual sky. The Gopamala is coming to the spiritual world.
It specifically mentions that. It's interesting because, you know, I had read that, you know, forms such as that. And then I asked Ramai Swami.
Yeah.
And he said that's correct, that those forms, you know, they're eternally present in this world but not there. So, but, you know, so...
I'll show you that.
It'd be good to see that. So that is, what is it? Bhagavatam.
Present Bhagavatam.
And that'll be good. So we have, so I've heard, now I've heard both versions.
Just trying to clarify.
So there's the answer to your question. There are two versions. Both coming from authoritative sources. So, you know, so that's a good one to, you know, let's research that a little bit more, because as we do the 10th canto, we discuss Krishna's childhood form, you know, it's, we want to see more references on that point. So we'll take that subject up a little bit later.
Krishna's childhood form? Bhanuswami mentioned Krishna is only in the
Kaishora
form in the spiritual world. That's right. It's, so then, okay, you know, we'll bear that in mind. It'll be good to get that reference from you, and then we'll try have a look at other references as well to try and get the big picture. While Hiranyakashipu looked all around to find the source of the sound, that wonderful form of the Lord, which could not be ascertained to be either a man or a lion, emerged from the pillar. In amazement, Hiranyakashipu wondered, what is this creature that is half man and half lion? Yeah, because it's an interesting concept, because, you know, Lord Narayan, Lord Varaha, he descended to the bottom of the Gavadaka Ocean and picked up the earth on his tusks. And his form was suitable for that task. Lord Narasimha, you know, appeared in a very ferocious form, you know, for killing the demon Hiranyakashipu. Of course, you know, those different features, you know, we don't find demons that need to be killed in the spiritual abode. And, you know, the planets don't sink into the bottom of the Gavadaka Ocean in the spiritual abode. So, you know, there are some
features of the Lord's pastimes which exist here. Even Krishna, when he travels on a chariot from one place to another, there are some features of his pastimes that he doesn't need to do there, to spend a day and a night travelling. Not required, on a chariot by whatever means is not necessarily required. So, there are many, many features of Krishna's pastimes, even in his, youthful form, and aspects of the various forms of Narayan appearing as an avatar that are required for the task that they require to execute in this world. So it would be interesting to research that. There does seem to be two schools of thought on that. While Hiranyakashipu looked all around to find the source of the sound, that wonderful form of the Lord, which could not be ascertained to be either a man or a lion, emerged from the pillar. In amazement, Hiranyakashipu wondered, what is this creature that is half man and half lion? Hiranyakashipu studied the form of the Lord, trying to decide who the form of Narasimha Dev standing before him was. The Lord's form was extremely fearsome because of his angry eyes, which resembled molten gold. His shining mane, which expanded the dimensions of his fearful face. His deadly teeth and his razor-sharp tongue, which moved about like a dueling sword. His ears were erect and motionless, and his nostrils and gaping mouth appeared like caves of a mountain. His jaws parted fearfully and his entire body touched the sky. His neck and was very short and thick. His chest broad, his waist thin, and the hairs on his body as white as the rays of the moon. His arms, which resembled flanks of soldiers, spread in all directions as he killed the demons, rogues and atheists with his conch shell, disc club lotus and other natural weapons. Getting to the exciting bit here. Where's that? So we've got a picture there. Let's find a picture of Narasimha. Look at that. So, so he's got his four weapons in his hands. Well, he's got, in that picture there, he's got eight arms, hasn't he? He's got a sword, a bow as well. Hiranyakashipu murmured to himself, Lord Vishnu, who possesses great mystic power, what is it? What is that?
It's the Naga
Nagini. Oh, okay.
But it wasn't exactly what you described, so I wasn't sure.
Yeah. And there's a little Naga in there, and you can open it?
Yes, you just twist it and open it.
Oh, yeah. John. That's a good container.
Yeah, there's a few nice ones
there that you can get. Very nice, yeah. What a beautiful Naga. Very nice. Hiranyakashipu murmured to himself, Lord Vishnu, who possesses great mystic power, has made this plan to kill me. But what is the use of such an attempt? Who can fight with me? Thinking like this and taking up his club, Hiranyakashipu attacked the Lord like an elephant. So, generally the elephant is defeated by the lion, and therefore the comparison of this verse is very appropriate. I've seen that on the nature shows. As a lion, you know, they're just, they're relentless. They'll just bring down an elephant. I've seen it happen. Just as a small insect falls forcefully into a fire and the insignificant creature becomes invisible, when Hiranyakashipu attacked the Lord, who was full of effulgence, Hiranyakashipu became invisible. This is not at all astonishing, for the Lord is always situated in pure goodness. Formerly, during creation, he entered the dark universe and illuminated it by his spiritual effulgence. Prabhupada mentions in this purport, he gives this famous verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita: Godhead is light, nescience is darkness. Where there is Godhead, there is no nescience. So he explains, this material world is full of darkness and ignorance of spiritual life, but by bhakti yoga, this ignorance is dissipated. The Lord appeared because of the bhakti yoga exhibited by Prahlad Maharaj, and as soon as the Lord appeared, the influence of Hiranyakashipu's passion and ignorance was vanquished, as the Lord's quality of pure goodness, or the Brahman effulgence, became prominent. In that prominent effulgence, Hiranyakashipu became invisible, or his influence became insignificant. Another example, of course, that Brahma appearing from within the dark universe, but when he received knowledge from the personality of Godhead, everything became clear, as everything becomes clear when one comes from the night to sunshine. The important point is that as long as we are in the material modes of nature, we're always in darkness. This darkness cannot be dissipated without the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is invoked by the practice of bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga creates a transcendental situation with no tinges of material contamination. Thereafter, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, who was extremely angry, swiftly attacked Nrisingadev with his club and began to beat him. Lord Nrisingadev, however, captured the great demon along with his club, just as Garuda might capture a great snake. O Yudhisthira, O great son of Bharat, when Lord Nrisingadev gave Hiranyakashipu a chance to slip from his hand, just as Garuda sometimes plays with a snake and lets it slip from his mouth, the demigods who had lost their abodes and who were hiding behind the clouds for fear of the demon did not consider that incident very good. Indeed, they were perturbed. When Hiranyakashipu was freed from the hands of Nrisingadev, he falsely thought that the Lord was afraid of his prowess. Therefore, after taking a little rest from the fight, he took up his sword and shield and again attacked the Lord with great force. So Prabhupada gives an interesting purport. When a sinful man enjoys material facilities, foolish people sometimes think, how is it that this sinful man is enjoying, whereas a pious man is suffering? By the will of the Supreme, a sinful man is sometimes given the chance to enjoy the material world as if he were not under the clutches of material nature, just so that he may be fooled. A sinful man who acts against the laws of nature must be punished, but sometimes he is given a chance to play, exactly like Hiranyakashipu when he was released from the hands of Nrisingadev. Hiranyakashipu is destined to be ultimately killed by Nrisingadev, but just to see the fun, the Lord gave him a chance to slip from his hands. And we read previously that Prahlad Maharaj described that all powerful rulers, all powerful people, and all the great empires of the world, they have all been vanquished, without exception. You know, they get a little chance to, you know, maybe for 100 years or 1,000 years, or, you know, something. But just see the fun. And, you know, from that we can see that, you know, if you give an empire, you know, 50 years and then it collapses, one may think, oh, maybe, you know, if they just had it kept going, you know, they would have got there and become all power. You know, you give them 1,000 years, 2,000 years, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know. So sometimes in order to understand the power of the material energy, when we see someone accumulating great power and opulence and facility, and we think, oh, maybe they're going to remain powerful and not the smash. So then, no, laws of material nature. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, last week, Stephen Hawking is one of the leading atheistic scientists.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But he, you know, he was probably hoping that somehow material science could save him. You know, hope in his lifetime perhaps develop science to the point where they could somehow do something with his body and keep him alive. There are a lot of scientists like that. There are many, you know, scientists and what have you who are having their bodies frozen, you know, different parts of the world, cryogenic freezing, hoping that, you know, in 1,000 years, 10,000 years, whatever, when they unfreeze them, will then have the technology that they can come back to life, sort of thing.
And they kept Lenin for a long time.
Yeah, he thawed out, did he?
Yeah, then after the communist regime fell apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You didn't see that coming, did he? The science is still there, but people just lost interest in him. O Yudhisthira, O great son of Bharat, when Lord Narasimhadev gave Hiranyakashipu a chance to slip from his hand. Yeah, we read that, yeah. So when Hiranyakashipu was freed from the hands of Narasimhadev, he falsely thought that the Lord was afraid of his prowess. We read that one too. I'm going backwards. Making a loud, shrill sound of laughter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who is extremely strong and powerful, captured Hiranyakashipu, who was protecting himself with his sword and shield, leaving no gaps open. With the speed of a hawk, Hiranyakashipu moved sometimes in the sky and sometimes on the earth, his eyes closed because of fear of Narasimhadev's laughter. Wouldn't you love to hear that shrill laughter of Narasimha? I can only imagine when he's about to destroy a demon. As a snake captures a mouse of Garuda, or Garuda captures a very venomous snake, Lord Narasimhadev captured Hiranyakashipu, who could not be pierced even by the thunderbolt of King Indra. As Hiranyakashipu moved his limbs here, there, and all around, very much afflicted at being captured, Lord Narasimhadev placed the demon on his lap, supporting him with his thighs, and in the doorway of the assembly hall, the Lord very easily tore the demon to pieces with the nails of his hand. So we see here that Hiranyakashipu had received the benediction from Lord Brahma, the benediction that he would not die on the land or in the sky. So that was kept intact, and he died in neither, but on his lap. He received the benediction that he would not die either during the day or night. And so he was killed in the evening, which is the end of day and the beginning of night. and the benediction that would not die from any weapon or killed by any person dead or alive. And so Nrisimha Dev pierced him with his Hiranyakashipu's body with his nails, which are not weapons, were neither living nor dead. Indeed, the nails can be called dead, but at the same time they can said to be alive. To keep intact all of Lord Brahma's benedictions, Lord Nrisimha Dev paradoxically but very easily killed the great demon. You know, when you cut your nails, I think Prabhupada uses this example for detachment. You know, you can cut your nails and there's no pain, you know. If you cut too short, you start to feel, you know, then the living, you get to the living part and you feel pain. So detachment is like that, you know. You cut a little off, that, you know, a little bit of detachment, but too much detachment it can cause problem. You know, it's not required. A little bit of detachment is good, but too much is not. Unnecessary detachment. So, you know, it has to be done carefully. The hair on Nrisimha Dev's head shook the clouds and scattered them here and there. His glaring eyes stole the effulgence of the luminaries in the sky, and his breathing agitated the seas and oceans. Because of his roaring, all the elephants in the world began to cry in fear. Airplanes were thrown into outer space in the upper planetary system by the hair of Nrisimha Dev's head. Because of the pressure of the Lord's lotus feet, the earth appeared to slip from its position, and all the hills and mountains sprang up due to his intolerable force. Because of the Lord's bodily effulgence, both the sky and all directions diminish in their natural illumination. Manifesting a full effulgence and a fearsome countenance, Lord Nrisimha, being very much angry and finding no contestant to face his power and opulence, then sat down in the assembly hall on the excellent throne of the king. Because of fear and obedience, no one could come forward to serve the Lord directly. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks in this connection that sometimes with great care and attention, great saintly persons and rishis offer the Lord valuable seats dedicated with Vedic mantras and tantras, but still the Lord does not sit upon those thrones. Hiranyakashipu, however, had formerly been Jaya, the doorkeeper at the Vaikuntha gate, and although he had fallen because of the curse of the Brahmanas and had gotten the nature of a demon, and although he had never offered anything to the Lord as Hiranyakashipu, the Lord is so affectionate to his devotee and servant that he nonetheless took pleasure in sitting on the throne that Hiranyakashipu had created. In this regard, it is to be understood that a devotee is fortunate in any condition of life. Hiranyakashipu had been exactly like a fever of meningitis in the head of the three worlds. I had meningitis. I know what that feels like. Thus, when the wives of the demigods in the heavenly planets saw that the great demon had been killed by the personal hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their faces blossomed in great joy. The wives of the demigods again and again showered flowers from heaven upon Lord Nrisimha Dev like rain. At that time, the airplanes of the demigods who desired to see the activities of the Supreme Lord Narayan crowded the sky. The demigods began beating drums and kettle drums, and upon hearing them, the angelic women began to dance, while the chiefs of the Gandharvas sang sweetly. My dear King Yudhisthira, the demigods then approached the Lord. They were headed by Lord Brahma, King Indra, and Lord Shiva, and included great saintly persons and the residents of Pitraloka, Siddhaloka, Vididharaloka, and the planet of the snakes. The Manus approached, and so did the chiefs of various other planets. The angelic dancers approached, as did the Gandharvas, the Charanas, the Yakshas, the inhabitants of Kanada Loka, the Vedalas, the inhabitants of Kimpurusha Loka, and the personal servants of Vishnu, like Sunanda and Kumuda. All of them came near the Lord, who glowed with intense light. They individually offered obeisances and prayers, their hands folded at their heads. Lord Brahma prayed, "My Lord, you are unlimited and you possess unending potencies. No one can estimate or calculate your prowess and wonderful influence, for your actions are never polluted by the material energy. Through the material qualities, you very easily create the universe, maintain it, and again annihilate it, yet you remain the same without deterioration. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you." So these transcendental pastimes, of course, are very difficult. And Prabhupada, again, in this section, quotes, we spoke about this last week, Tandra Vakya Kriya Mudra Vigyaya Mabujaya. No one can understand the activities of the Lord's servants. Therefore, what to speak of the activities of the Lord? Who can understand how Krishna is benefiting the entire world? The Lord is addressed as Duranta Shakti because no one can understand his potencies and how he acts. Sri Rudra Uvacha. Lord Shiva said, "The end of the millennium is the time for your anger." So, of course, they're offering different prayers. They all have, Lord Brahma has great prowess. He's involved in one sense in creation, but also maintenance and destruction to some degree. He perceives these, but nothing like what the Lord can do to remain undiminished and without deterioration. And now Lord Shiva, who's involved in destruction. "The end of the millennium is the time for your anger. Now that this insignificant demon, Hiranyakasipu, has been killed, O my Lord, who are naturally affectionate to your devotee, kindly protect his son, Prahlad Maharaj, who is standing nearby as your fully surrendered devotee." So, Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport that when the Lord appeared in great anger to kill Hiranyakasipu, everyone was extremely afraid of the Lord's attitude. But Lord Shiva, knowing very well that the Lord's anger is also his leela, was not afraid. Lord Shiva knew that he would have to play the part of anger for the Lord. Kala means Lord Shiva, Bhairava, and Kopa refers to the Lord's anger. Kopa Kala, the end of each millennium. Actually, the Lord is always affectionate to his devotees, even though he may appear very angry. Because he is avyatma, because he never falls down. Even when angry, the Lord is affectionate towards his devotees. So we were discussing that in the first chapter of the seventh canto, that actually the Lord is always affectionate. That's his permanent position. Even when he's neutral. What to speak of when he's angry, even when he's neutral, his actually position is that he's always affectionate to his devotees. Therefore, Lord Shiva reminded the Lord to act like an affectionate father toward Prahlad Maharaj, who was standing by the Lord's side as an exalted, fully surrendered devotee. King Indra said, "O Supreme Lord, you are the deliverer and protector. Our shares of sacrifices, which are actually yours, have been recovered from the demon by you." Because the demoniac king Hiranyakashipu was most fearsome, our hearts, which are your permanent abode, were all overtaken by him. Now by your presence, the gloom and darkness in our hearts have been dissipated. O Lord, for those who always engage in your service, which is more exalted than liberation, all material opulence is insignificant. They do not even care for liberation, not to speak of the benefits of karma, artha, and dharma. So here, Prabhupada is explaining that although the demons are attached to material enjoyment, they are devotees of the Lord who act according to the rules and regulations of Vedic injunctions. During the reign of Hiranyakashipu, everyone was disturbed in the routine duties of Vedic civilization. When Hiranyakashipu was killed, all the demigods who had always been disturbed by Hiranyakashipu felt relief in their general way of life. Because the government in Kali Yuga is full of demons, I'm sure they'd like to... It's interesting, you know, they're purchasing our books and now putting them in the libraries. And in our books we're saying, in Kali Yuga, the governments are full of demons. The living conditions of the devotees are always disturbed. Devotees cannot perform yajna, and thus they cannot partake of the remnants of foodstuff offered in yajna for the worship of Lord Vishnu. The hearts of the demigods are always filled with fear of the demons, and therefore they cannot think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The engagement of the demigods is to think of the Lord always within the core of their hearts. The demigods fully absorb themselves in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead to become perfect yogis, but because of the presence of demons, their hearts are filled with the activities of the demons. Thus their hearts, which are meant to be the abode of the Supreme Lord, are practically occupied by the demons. All the demigods felt relieved when Hiranyakashipu was dead, for they could easily think of the Lord. They could then receive the results of sacrifice and become happy even though in the material world. So, very interesting position. Prahlad Maharaj's position is different. His thoughts were not, his heart was not filled with Hiranyakashipu. His heart was always filled, you know, and he was literally, you know, the very forefront of, you know, close and personal encounters with demoniac. It's a... this is, you know, it's a phenomenon. I see this, you know, even amongst devotees, what to speak of others, but sometimes devotees, different relatives, you know, I've had cases where devotees have come to me and different relatives in India are doing black magic on them. And they ask me, you know, to do it. But it really does, it consumes their consciousness, you know. Their ability to think of Krishna is, you know, night and day they have this problem, just this problem in their hearts, you know. So, like the demigods.
Is there any solution, like from a devotional perspective?
Well, you know, we're supposed to follow the instructions. If we... if we have the faith in the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas and Prabhupada and Krishna, then, you know, we just follow their instructions under all circumstances, and we just, you know, mould our life in such a way that we can always think of Krishna. I mean, you know, that is the solution. But it's surprising how that... So there's that verse... You know, to those who have implicit faith in the spiritual master and the Supreme Person of Godhead, all the importance of the Vedas are automatically revealed. And that means that Krishna is always revealed, Krishna consciousness. But we discussed that, I think, last week or the week before. It's a position that not a lot of devotees, you know, that implicit faith is not there. And so, you know, when something tests it, they'll put aside the instructions of the guru, of Krishna, and try some, literally do other things, but somehow they feel that, you know, that's not what I need to do now. Put that aside. I need to sort out this problem. But someone with, you know, faith and proper understanding and realization, like Prahlad Maharaj, that's just not going to happen. You know, that implicit faith in the guru, the Vaishnavas, and the person I've got it, they're just not, you know, they're not going to put that aside. You know, they understand that there is no more auspicious position. Prabhupada said the safest place to be in, you know, the material world is like Harinam Kirtan, you know, is somewhere you're just chanting Hare Krishna. But that faith is not there. Krishna, one of the things that Krishna does is that, you know, everyone would like to imitate that they are the guru, you know, the pure devotee, the great Vaishnava. As soon as someone thinks above their platform, Krishna, you know, through his different energies, he makes some arrangement that, this devotee, who I'm very affectionate to, but due to pride, they're placing themselves in a situation that they're not in. It's a false position. It's not the truth. It's not helpful to them, and it tends to mean that they have a tendency to neglect the devotees that they should not be neglecting, or even sometimes be impudent or disrespectful to devotees they should be taking, you know. And you know, if someone tried to place himself, just to give you a vivid example, if someone tried to place himself, which sometimes we've had, on the position of Srila Prabhupada, after Prabhupada left this planet, others come out of the woodworks. Oh, if I had a come, or, you know, now I'm here, you know, Prabhupada's done so much, but now, you know, we'll do something better, and, you know, and so many mistakes, you know. Krishna's not going to allow that. He's not going to let anyone, you know, diminish, you know, the stature of a pure devotee. So he's going to reveal that, you know, one way or another. So a very vivid example. Krishna will, as soon as one does that, Krishna will make arrangements that their level of Krishna knows their level of faith is this, and if I just, you know, add a little bit of pressure, they'll just drop my instructions like a hot potato, because he knows, you know, Krishna knows, you know exactly. You might ask a question, you know. We see in Krishna consciousness that over the course of time, that many devotees come and, you know, there is that full surrender, but there's a certain point at which they're either offered some material benediction, in which case they say, okay, I'm not going to miss this opportunity, I'll take this, you know, material, you know, there's a good opportunity here, you know, for wealth and enjoyment. And now, you know, if I leave Krishna consciousness now, I'm actually going to really enjoy. I was really suffering up to this point, so that's probably about all I need to do, you know. But, or, you know, there's some great difficulty, in which case, no one will blame me if I give up Krishna consciousness now because of the difficulty I'm in, like that. But, you know, there is a certain point at which they will put aside the Krishna consciousness for some circumstances which are arisen, and the devotees who don't do that, then, you know, gradually, you know, Krishna reveals them that when everyone else, accepted this or that or gave up my instructions, but then, you know, here are the devotees that didn't. So they're in a different category. They're in a higher category. So, you know, Krishna makes that arrangement. If we try to pretend to the devotees or to Krishna, he will not allow it. That's the point. He will not allow devotees to falsely place themselves on an equal or even a close platform with his elevated devotees. As if, you know, in other words, Krishna is thinking, if someone thinks that my really elevated devotees have only the qualities that you have, that would be a great disaster. You see? I don't want that. What Krishna wants that, you know, when I'm presenting my, you know, exalted devotees, they have to know that they're beyond this, they're beyond this one, they're way above there, you know, like that. Then you know. So anyone who tries to almost, you know, sometimes they say, you know, it is said that the temple president should be honored as much as Srila Prabhupada. So, you know, which is true. But there's also a danger if, you know, devotees would accept people in, you know, certain positions are somehow doing as much as what, you know, Srila Prabhupada is capable of doing. It's a very dangerous thought. It's a statement that has to be presented very carefully, because if devotees think, oh, well, you know, Prabhupada was a great devotee and temple presidents were on that level, you know, so now I understand Prabhupada's level of Krishna consciousness. So that's very dangerous. It really has to be spelled out, you know. So you know, Krishna will maintain the glories of his devotees, and therefore he will not allow others to in such a way say, well, this is the platform of exalted devotee and therefore I'm sort of a little bit close to this great devotee, whatever. Krishna will not accept that. He'll say, no, nothing like it. I have to preserve the glories of my pure devotees, and I will not allow that. You know, one time, Srila Prabhupada, I'm not sure where he was in Australia, and sometimes the devotees would argue with Prabhupada. Prabhupada would take the, you know, the position of the demoniac view and the materialistic view, and then he would present that, and then he'd expect his disciples to defeat him in Krishna, you know, using their Krishna consciousness. One devotee, you know, he was the temple president of Perth, but he said to Prabhupada, you know, presenting the argument of the way, as Vaishnavas, you know, we, and Prabhupada stopped him. Vaishnavas, you are not Vaishnava. You'll fall down at the drop of a hat. You know, be very careful. You know, different occasions, Srila Prabhupada very quickly, you know, chastised disciples for just too easily calling themselves Vaishnavas. You know, it's not such a cheap thing. So, you know, here the demigods, from this, we understand that they're devotees, but you know, they're not like Prahlad. Their minds, their Krishna consciousness, you know. So this is like the, you know, devotees who enjoy a certain about material facility within Krishna consciousness, within ISKCON. But at the same time, the devotees, and sometimes even those personalities become very powerful. It's a bit of an expression in ISKCON that, you know, such and such is an Indra-like devotee. Means, you know, they're very powerful. They will cause trouble to other devotees to keep their power. And, you know, they're nice devotees. They're not demons, you know, but, you know, the Krishna consciousness under certain conditions goes back to the material conditions, not the it doesn't always stay
we had Indra, the Kirtaniya in Vrindavan.
Yeah, he was a nice devotee. So these prayers are being offered according to their, you know, positions. Any comments? Yeah, we're going for time. Oh, we're pretty much finished. Why don't we leave it there? So we can finish up these next week. We're at verse 44, and then we'll finish this chapter because we'll go up to verse 56, and then we'll do chapter 9. Prahlad pacifies Lord Narsingadeva with prayer. So read that chapter 9 as well before you come next week, and we'll continue from there. So we've got two chapters to go, and then after that we'll look at we got 9 and 10. After that we'll just have a bit of a discussion as to, you know, what we're going to do, but I certainly don't want to race forward beyond the point of these 10 chapters before we've actually, you know, all done, you know, an exam and essays and, you know, got a clear understanding of some of the things we want to, how we're going to proceed. But let's leave it there. What's that?
This had a reference to the Bhagavatamsa. So it's not really talking about the eternal position of Narasimhadeva, Kurma or anything like that. But it's talking more about what happens if one worships these particular forms of the Lord.
Right.
So they can, in Sarupya, they can get similar forms in Vaikuntha.
They can get similar forms in Vaikuntha. Right.
Say, for example, as a tortoise or a fish or a
man. Yeah. Yeah.
Because of their association.
Yes.
In their incarnation.
Right.
In
their yes.
So they kind of get an eternal form.
Right. Like that.
Yeah, like
yes.
But no, but it's not the Lord
has that.
Has that form.
Right.
But then Prahlad Maharaj, he doesn't take eternal form.
No, because that we discussed, right? Because it's the devotee of Krishna, that's
He's a devotee of Krishna.
He's a devotee of Krishna.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Thanks for clarifying. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Hare Krishna. That's a very nice quote. It's a very nice quote. And it's good that, you know, we've clarified that. That's good. Yeah. Excellent. Hare Krishna.
Last class you said next week will we have a class next week?
What happens next? What date is it next week? It's
I have with my diary.
So next week is the 31st. Thank you. Yeah.
Next week
is Easter. So yes.
No,
that's the week after. Hang on, I've skipped a page. Hang on. I'll put my glasses on. Maybe I have them on upside down. No, next week we will be here. Yeah, we definitely are here. So we're going to finish, we'll look at chapter 9. Yeah? It's the week after Easter, right, which is the 31st. That's the only day we'll miss. Yeah, by the grace of the Lord. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, thanks for that. So there's no way we'll be doing any exams or anything before Easter, but sometime, you know, leading up to Nrisingha Chaturdasi, which is on the 29th of April, we would like to somehow finish all of this, including exams, essays and everything, something like that.
Hare Krishna.